On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 90, Biceps, the Industrial Military Complex, PR Newspapers, Hypnosis, and Blueberries. All of this and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. Tab for my diet. Tab. Refreshing tab. Well, my diet is actually including working out at the YMCA 4 days out of the week. I have a plan. Remember I was talking about that last week? Where's my plan? Anyway, what do I alternate? I alternate body parts every other day. I do, what is it that I do? I do legs, back, and biceps on one day. They are called pull exercises because you're pulling things. Not pulling your pod. You're pulling things. And the other ones are push exercises, and that's your chest, and that's your triceps, and what else is there? Back, shoulders, chest, and triceps. That's the push exercises. And what I have done is, first of all, let me tell you, the guys at the gym who have been working there a while, and you can tell who they are. They're very friendly and are willing to give you advice, even unbidden advice, when you're doing like free weights, because they look at you and they're like, listen, Mary, you're doing it all wrong, Sharita, you're going to hurt yourself. So I have gotten a lot of advice about how to do certain exercises, and it's just little things like making sure that you keep your heel to the floor when you're doing certain exercises, or keeping your extending it to the proper way or whatever. It's just really interesting, you know, and it makes such a big difference. Little things. So that's what I've been doing this past week. I'm going to get buff. I'm getting all ready for Washington State. I'm going to show Washington State the buff side of Ken. So anyway, it's the little things, and that's why it's important for my listeners to make a donation to the Easter Seals. I got two note donations this week. However, they are from regular people. I mean, not regular people. My regular contributors, Darren from Florida and Johnny and Jose. Though Johnny and Jose didn't give money last year, so maybe that's a new thing. You'd think he would, right? But I'm still looking for the people out there who don't contact me to make some sort of donation. You can make it anonymously if you don't want to be have your name on the Easter Seals page. You guys are smart enough to know what's going on in the world with Easter Seals and stuff. You can see that the address, when you click the link to Easter Seals, it is Easter Seals. Okay? I mean, I don't know if you don't trust me or something. I don't know. I'm an honest guy, maybe too honest, too kind. You know, when it comes down to things like this, saying, oh, please donate. I need you to donate. So this week here, you're getting a show because I have two donations. So we'll see what happens next week or this week. So I want to see some more donations. We're up to 33% of what we need to do. Right? It's $150 for Christ's sakes, okay? So there's plenty of people out there. We can certainly get up to $150, but I would like to get more because I know that I have that many listeners. I know the number of listeners I have. I know the number of downloads, and I know that we can do it. Don't be an asshole, okay? Which leads me to where does it lead me to? It leads me to, you can contact me at 206-984-3617. That's 206-984-3617. Just put that into your cell phone. And when you're listening to the various podcasts, come and, you know, call me. I have another phone call from Zillafag, and it's regarding last week's show. He loved this segment on 70s porn. Now, I must preface this. He said some mean things about handicapped kids. I don't think it's very sensitive. Of course, I don't expect them to be sensitive. Jose, what are you doing with my gym clothes? What are you trying to work out? Sniffing my jock? Strap? What are you doing? Come on. Oh, yeah. Oh, you probably want me to take your coat off. Okay, sorry about that. So Jose was rifling around in my gym shorts. And there's nothing there in the gym shorts for him. So, yes, it's important for you to donate. Anyway, Zillafag, I love Zillafag, okay? And the only reason why I preface this is because I know, I have met these kids from Easter Seals. They're the sweetest kids. And they, like I said, they have challenges. They're real people for me. Okay, I have met them. I've walked with them last year. I've talked to them, talked to these kids. I mean, they're humans. I mean, they're beings. They have names. They have families. They have histories, okay? And so it comes off a little mean-spirited, this voicemail I'm going to play. But I'm going to play it because he says something in there, and then I will respond to it afterwards, okay?
Hi, Kenty. It's Zilla, and I was just finally listening to your show with the 1970s porn. That is so good that I will have to donate some money to Easter Seals, even though I couldn't give a damn handicapped people and shit. Just getting in my damn way. That's what it is. Lazy people. Hi, I'm too lazy to walk. I'm gonna sit in a wheelchair. Yeah, whatever. And let me see. That's my autism. Autism. That's what matters more than Easter Seals. Screw Easter Seals. We all have our little shit, you know? But after, and what's the thing with Jose's dreaming of us? Is he a bestiality type doggy? God, that's kind of hot. I've had it here. Bye.
So Zillafag, where the hell is your donation? You should tell me you're going to donate and then you don't donate. Honey, you need to go to the Easter Seals page and donate just like everybody else. There's Kristen, there's JW Mandrake from Mandrake Society Radio, there's Mikey Pod, Madge Weinstein, I bet you she could put in a couple shekels, as Wanda Wisdom, she's making money podcasting. Come on, spread some of the joy, come over here and sponsor me for the walk, okay? And if they're not listening, you know, how about Special Delivery Mark in California, okay? And there is the Scribe Music Show, Trevor, which I have to set up I'm setting up an interview with Trevor from Scribe Music Show. And I don't know if the other guy, what's his name? Lifespring Podcast. Come on, give some of your Christian charity to Easter Seals, okay? You know, come on. $5 even. You can afford $5. I mean, I'm not asking you to break the bank. I'm not asking you to give beyond your means, but I know you can give something. Okay, Kristen? Okay, JW? Okay, whatever. Who else? I can't remember all your names. Please forgive me. I have that many listeners that I forget their names. I'm bad with names. Joji, yeah, that's it. Joji, come on. Cough up some cash for the kids, okay?
But I don't want to. I love him. He's my lover.
I just said that for the wooden response, you know, from that 70s porn. Anyway, you know, I love doing the show, but I need to have, you know, asking you to sponsor me, okay? Okay, I don't want to rant. So this week you get a show because I had some donations. I told you I'm going to go on strike, so I need some more donations. Come on, Sarita. Come on, everybody. Come on, wake up. I know you're listening to this. You're probably, you know, you're probably in the car. Oh, okay, Kenty, I'll donate. And then the next thing you know, you get home, go party, go get a drink. Oh, and next thing you listen to this show. Oh, I was going to donate, but I forgot all about it. Well, you can't donate. Write it down, tattoo it on your hand, whatever. Call your cell phone, leave yourself a message. So when you get home and retrieve your messages and go to your fabulous life, like Reagan Fox, then go donate, okay? Call yourself and get into a – computers are everywhere. They're in your shoes, you know? I mean, just get online and get a donation into me. Sponsor me, okay? This is all electronic, honey, okay? You can – I mean, I don't know why people aren't really – I mean, you say you love me and everything and all this, but you're not doing it, so it bothers me. And I think to myself, I get paranoid. I'm like, do they think I'm like trying to steal from them or something? I'm not trying to do that. I am trying to raise money. And of course, when it makes me feel uncomfortable too. Maybe it's my own, you know, people ask for money or whatever. You know, I'm a little leery. Even when podcasting first started, I was a little leery. I was like, it's going to cost me money, but it doesn't. Well, it does cost me money because I'm the one who produces the damn thing. But anyway, I need you to sponsor me for this walk, okay? Come on. Don't be dildos, okay? My Flata Show listeners, I thought better of you, okay? And it really saddens me to think that you're just a bunch of mean-spirited, money-grubbing people. What are you, Scrooge? Okay, on that note, I'm going to start the show.
Lash! That Brenda Starr you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you.
Brenda Starr update. Okay, kids. It's been a while, but Brenda Starr is getting good. As we know, Brenda has become editor of a newspaper, which Tina Titan owns. Her top editorial writer, Ernest, never comes into work. He works from home, so she doesn't know who he is. And so she calls him and says, you know, Ernest, I want to see you, and if you don't come in, I'm going to fire you. However, that's kind of difficult because Tina Titan loves Ernest. So Ernest says, okay, I'll meet you at the Star Bar at 7 o'clock. So Brenda goes to the Star Bar, and she's waiting. And who comes in but Tina Titan, with her boyfriend, Jack Grant. Jack Grant, a movie star who is Starstruck Magazine's Sexiest Man of the Year. And he is kind of sexy, even if he's a drawing. And so everybody, at this point, you know, while she's waiting for her Ernest to show up, you know, these people, Jack Grant shows up and Tina Titan. And everybody starts to recognize Brenda from the blog, the Brenda blog. We don't know who the blogger is, but they're talking crap about Brenda Starr. So, let me say here. So, Ernest, it doesn't show up. I'm reading my notes. It's so damn exciting. So, let's see here. Where are we? So, Ernest and Tina are eating dinner. And Ernest, no. Jack Grant and Tina are eating dinner, and Ernest doesn't show up. So Jack Grant says to Tina Titan, hey, you know, I'm trying to find out where I'm at. Sorry, I paused there. Jack Grant says, hey, Brenda looks lonely. Why don't we invite her over? So she goes over to the table with Tina Titan, and Tina's like, you know, Jack Grant's my boy toy, and isn't he great? Suddenly the phone rings, for Tina Titan's phone, and she has to leave because she has a meeting with some people. Their names on, you can read their names on, at the Brenda Starr webpage, the comics page. So she says, so Tina says to Brenda, you take care of my boy toy so all these hungry women don't go after him. So, Jack sits down with Brenda, and they're talking about life, and you find out that Jack doesn't like reporters, and so Jack goes, I have to go to the boy toy room, so can you wait a minute, don't leave, After he leaves to go to the boy toy room, which I think is funny, Ernest calls on Brenda's cell phone. And he says, she goes, you know, that's not really nice to set me up in a Hollywood bar, you know, humiliate me like that. And Ernest says, I'm just testing your capacity for humiliation, Brenda. However, I can't make it tonight, so we'll have to make it another night. So she hangs up, and Jack comes back. You know, you have a feeling that Ernest and Jack are the same, you know, but you know, you don't really know because you don't see Ernest's face when they draw him, and he's naked. I think he's nude the whole time that he's doing his work from home. So Tina and Jack. We find out that Tina and Jack are just friends. They're not girlfriend and boyfriend. And that he's a notorious bachelor. And Brenda says, well, what's that mean? You're either married or gay. And he says, no, I have high standards and I'm not afraid to be alone, he says. So where are we now? So then the next day, right, Brenda goes to work. And Tina's like, Tina is... when Brenda and Jack Grant left the restaurant, these paparazzi were taking pictures. The next morning on the front page, it says, Jack Grant has a new beau, or not beau, has a new girlfriend. Hold on, let me go get my tea. Oh, nice, hot, refreshing tea. So where were we here? So the next morning, the newspaper has splashed all over the front pages this picture of Jack and Brenda Starr. And I think he kissed her, too. So it was like, you know, on the papers. I forget. But it says, does Jack Grant have a new girlfriend? So Brenda's like, I'm sorry, you know, the paper did that. We're not seeing each other. And she goes, oh, don't worry, honey. Brenda, I'm not dating Jack. He's just convenience. And that had to do with the meeting I had last night where I had to leave. And she goes, why? She goes, well, we are getting together. We've decided to run Jack Grant as for president, to nominate him for president. So she's like, Brenda's like, well, first let me say this. Okay, so Tina Titan and her friends want to have Jack Grant run for president because he's very popular. Sexiest man alive, you know, well known. And she goes, well, an actor's as president, it's a precedent for that, right? And so she goes, so tomorrow's blog or tomorrow's editorial, you'll have Ernest write the first pro Jack Grant nomination. He's going to be all over the paper. And Brenda's like, I don't want to do that. And she goes, well, you don't have a choice, do you now, Miss Brenda Starr? When you signed your contract, it said if you quit in the first year, you'll forfeit your annual salary. You'll forfeit a year's worth of salary. So Brenda's like, oh, I can't do that. Because I don't think she's, you know, modest. She has a modest income. So Ernest writes the editorial. It's this pro Jack Grant. So finally, Brenda's getting upset and upset. So Brenda says, you know what? I can't control the editorials, but I can control the news. So she goes to the newsroom and says to one of the news reporters, I must speak more clearly. This is the new media, but you must speak clearly, just like the traditional media. Sometimes my words run together. I'm sorry if that's a problem for you. Okay, I try to be as natural as possible. Of course, as you see, I'm just going off on a tangent. But anyway, Brenda says, I can write the damn news. Well, you really can't write the news. You have to report it. You have to find it. What is news anyway? That's a good question. But anyway, so she goes, I want you. So she talks to one of her minions, not minions, one of the reporters, and she goes, I want you to find as much dirt on Jack as possible. And the guy said, you know what? I was beginning to worry about you, Brenda, but I like you because this is a real newspaper guy. She goes, you know what? As long as this is still a newspaper and not a PR machine. And that's where we end. So go, Brenda, go. Just listen to the song. And your subconscious will listen to me.
you to go to the inflatedshow.com, click on the link to the podcast, and donate to Easter Seals Bunny. I need you to donate cash. I need you to donate cash. Sorry, I need you to donate check.
Fellow Americans. First, I should like to express my gratitude to the radio and television networks for the opportunities they have given me over the years to bring reports and messages to our nation. My special thanks go to them for the opportunity of addressing you this evening. 3 days from now, after half a century in the service of our country, I shall lay down the responsibilities of office as, in traditional and solemn ceremony, the authority of the presidency is vested in my successor. This evening, I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen. Like every other citizen, I wish the new president and all who will labor with him Godspeed. I pray that the coming years will be blessed with peace and prosperity for all. Our people expect their president and the Congress to find essential agreement on issues of great moment, the wise resolution of which will better shape the future of the nation. My own relations with the Congress, which began on a remote and tenuous basis when, long ago, a member of the Senate appointed me to West Point, have since ranged to the intimate during the war and immediate post-war period, and finally to the mutually interdependent during these past 8 years. In this final relationship, the Congress and the administration have, on most vital issues, cooperated well. To serve the nation good rather than mere partisanship, and so have assured that the business of the nation should go forward. So my official relationship with the Congress ends in a feeling, on my part, of gratitude that we have been able to do so much together. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. 3 of these involved our own country. Despite these holocausts, America is today the strongest, the most influential, and most productive nation in the world. Understandably proud of this preeminence, we yet realize that America's leadership and prestige depend not merely upon our unmatched material progress, riches, and military strength, but on how we use our power in the interest of world peace and human betterment. Throughout America's adventure in free government, our basic purposes have been to keep the peace, to foster progress in human achievement, and to enhance liberty, dignity, and integrity among peoples and among nations. To strive for less would be unworthy of a free and religious people. Any failure traceable to arrogance or our lack of comprehension or readiness to sacrifice would inflict upon us grievous hurt, both at home and abroad. Progress toward these noble goals is persistently threatened by the conflict now engulfing the world. It commands our whole attention, absorbs our very beings. We face a hostile ideology, global in scope, atheistic in character, ruthless in purpose, and insidious in method. Unhappily, the danger it poses promises to be of indefinite duration. To meet it successfully, there is call for not so much the emotional and transitory sacrifices of crisis, but rather those which enable us to carry forward steadily, surely, and without complaint, the burdens of a prolonged and complex struggle with liberty the stake. Only thus shall we remain, despite every provocation, on our charted course toward permanent peace and human betterment. Crises there will continue to be. In meeting them, whether foreign or domestic, great or small, there is a recurring temptation to feel that some spectacular and costly action could become the miraculous solution to all current difficulties. A huge increase in newer elements of our defenses. Development of unrealistic programs to cure every ill in agriculture. A dramatic expansion in basic and applied research. These and many other possibilities, each possibly promising in itself, may be suggested as the only way to the road we wish to travel. But each proposal must be weighed in the light of a broader consideration, the need to maintain balance in and among national programs. Balance between the private and the public economy. Balance between the cost and hoped for advantages. Balance between the clearly necessary and the comfortably desirable. Balance between our essential requirements as a nation and the duties imposed by the nation upon the individual. Balance between actions of the moment and the national welfare of the future. Good judgment seeks balance and progress. Lack of it eventually finds imbalance and frustration. The record of many decades stands as proof that our people and their government have, in the main, understood these truths and have responded to them well in the face of threat and stress. But threats, new in kind or degree, constantly arise. Of these, I mention two only. A vital element in keeping the peace is our military establishment. Our arms must be mighty, ready for instant action, so that no potential aggressor may be tempted to risk his own destruction. Our military organization today bears little relation to that known of any of my predecessors in peacetime, or indeed by the fighting men of World War II or Korea. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. It is the task of statesmanship to mold, to balance, and to integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system, ever aiming toward the supreme goals of our free society. Another factor in maintaining balance involves the element of time. As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow. During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. Such a confederation must be one of equals. The weakest must come to the conference table with the same confidence as do we, protected as we are by our moral, economic, and military strength. That table, though scarred by many past frustrations, cannot be abandoned for the certainty agony of disarmament of the battlefield. Disarmament with mutual honor and confidence is a continuing imperative. Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose. Because this need is so sharp and apparent, I confess that I lay down my official responsibilities in this field with a definite sense of disappointment. As one who has witnessed the horror and the lingering sadness of war, as one who knows that another war could utterly destroy this civilization, which has been so slowly and painfully built over thousands of years, I wish I could say tonight that a lasting peace is in sight. Happily, I can say that war has been avoided. Steady progress toward our ultimate goal has been made, but so much remains to be done. As a private citizen, I shall never cease to do what little I can to help the world advance along that road. So in this, my last good night to you as your president, I thank you for the many opportunities you have given me for public service in war and in peace. I trust in that service, you find some things worthy. As for the rest of it, I know you will find ways to improve performance in the future. You and I, my fellow citizens, need to be strong in our faith that all nations under God will reach the goal of peace with justice. May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility, that all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the sources, scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth, and that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love. Now, on Friday noon, I am to become a private citizen. I am proud to do so. I look forward to it. Thank you.
But you will come and donate to the Easter Seal. You will help sponsor the world. You will come to the Easter Seal.
Far from the flaming gay cabaret, off with the bright sunbeam. Just like the fools we are children again. Just to the past let us gaze. Come, take a trip on a nursery train back to our childhood.
Before June 12th, you must donate to Easter Seals.
Hand in hand to dreamy wonderland. Upon a cloud we'll fly, side by side we'll stand. We'll float right through the air, and when we've landed there,
so important. It is so important that you do this. It is
because of health people. You will just ignore this. No, don't ignore. Do not ignore this voice. Do not ignore this voice. You listen to it subliminally. Just have your mind listen to the music. Your real mind will listen to the music. Because your real mind knows better. Sponsor Kenty on the walk. So sponsor Kenty on the Easter Seals walk to where he's going. And as a good friend,
Hi. What do I have to do to come into the meeting?
Where do you live? It's your lane. You have to go up
to Hi.
Your street, please.
So even payment was found late, whether it was found early or late.
Ken Steffler.
It's something that we had to pay.
Okay.
And our debt budget.
Where do I go? Right there? Thanks. Thank you.
Is a solution to the town's financial woes is if you are certain that the voters will vote for this override and every override that follows into the indefinite future. Otherwise, this override is just a stopgap, a temporary fix. And either way, this override is the first step on the road to the next override. For the Finance Committee, two questions. If we vote for this override today, and if it passes at the polls, for how long is the town in decent financial shape? And if we vote for this override today, and if it passes at the polls, when do you, the Finance Committee, come back to us, the town meeting, for the next override?
Moderator, did you take my crystal ball? Toby, there's no way you can be able to predict your second half of your life. It could be next year, it could be in 3 years. But when you look at the numbers, you build a model of this. It's at the level of this override, first of all, a third of it is just to prevent traction. It's fixing yesterday's problem, not trying to do something for the future. The other items are some of the bare minimum needs that the town has a very high need. There's a list that we compiled when we went out and talked to all the department heads about things that within reason, not just the blue sky, were projects or tasks or services that they might like to perform or expand. Nothing outlandish was $2.5 million. Okay, that's unreasonable to us. But there's a pent-up demand to do deferred maintenance.
Sponsors for the Easter season.
Robert Frost from his collection of poems North of Boston. You ought to have seen what I saw on my way to the village through Mortensen's pasture today. Blueberries as big as the end of your thumb, real sky blue and heavy and ready to drum in the cavernous pail of the first one to come, and all ripe together, not some of them green and some of them ripe. You ought to have seen. I don't know what part of the pasture you mean. You know, where they cut off the woods? Let me see. It was 2 years ago. Or no, can it be? No longer than that? And the following fall, the fire ran and burned it all up but the wall. Why, there hasn't been time for the bushes to grow. That's always the way with the blueberries, though. There may not have been the ghost of a sign of them anywhere under the shade of the pine, but get the pine out of the way. You may burn the pasture all over until not a fern or grass blade is left, not to mention a stick. And presto! They're up all around you as thick and hard to explain as a conjurer's trick. It must be on charcoal they fatten their fruit. I taste in them sometimes the flavor of soot, and after all, really, they're ebony-skinned. The blue's but a mist from the breath of the wind, a tarnish that goes at a touch of the hand, and less than the tan with which pickers are tanned. Does Mortensen know what he has, do you think? He may and not care, and so leave the chewink to gather them for him. You know what he is. He won't make the fact that they're rightfully his an excuse for keeping us other folk out. I wonder you didn't see Lauren about. The best of it was that I did. Do you know? I was just getting through what the field had to show, and over the wall and into the road, when who should come by with a Democrat load of all the young chattering Laurens alive, but Lauren, the fatherly, out for a drive? You saw? He saw you then? What did he do? Did he frown? He just kept nodding his head up and down. You know how politely he goes by. But he thought a big thought, I could tell by his eye, which being expressed might be this in effect. I have left those there berries, I shrewdly suspect, to ripen too long. I am greatly to blame. He's a thriftier person than some I could name. He seems to be thrifty, and hasn't he need with the mouths of all those young Laurens to feed? He has brought them all up on wild berries, they say, like birds. They store a great many away. They eat them the year round, and those they don't eat, they sell in the store and buy shoes for their feet. Who cares what they say? It's a nice way to live, just taking what nature is willing to give, not forcing her hand with harrow or plow. I wish you had seen his perpetual bow and the air of the youngsters. Not one of them turned, and they looked so solemn, absurdly concerned. I wish I knew half what the flock of them know, of where all those berries and other things grow, cranberries and bogs and raspberries on top of the boulder-strewn mountain, and when they will crop. I met them one day, and each had a flower stuck into his berries as fresh as a shower, some strange kind, they told me it hadn't a name. I've told you how once, not long after we came, I almost provoked poor Lauren to mirth by going to him, of all people on earth, to ask if he knew any fruit to be had for the picking. The rascal, he said, he'd be glad to tell if he knew, but the year had been bad. There had been some berries, but those were all gone. He didn't say where they had been. He went on, I'm sure, as polite as could be. He spoke to his wife in the door. Let me see, Mame, we don't know any good burying place. It was all he could do to keep a straight face. If he thinks all the fruit that grows wild is for him, he'll find he's mistaken. See here, for a whim, we'll pick in the Mortensen's pasture this year. We'll go in the morning, that is, if it's clear, and the sun shines out warm, the vines must be wet. It's so long since I picked, I almost forget how we used to pick berries. We took one look around, then sank out of sight like trolls underground, and saw nothing more of each other or heard, unless when you said I was keeping a bird away from its nest, and I said it was you. Well, one of us is.
for complaining it flew around and around us, and then for a while we picked till I feared you had wandered a mile and I thought I had lost you. I lifted a shout too loud for the distance you were, it turned out, for when you made answer, your voice was as low as talking. You stood up beside me, you know. We shan't have the place to ourselves to enjoy, not likely when all the young Laurens deploy. They'll be there tomorrow, or even tonight. They won't be too friendly. They may be polite. To people they look on as having no right to pick where they're picking. But we don't complain. We ought to have seen how it looked in the rain, the fruit mixed with water in layers of leaves, like two kinds of jewels, a vision for thieves.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Understood one word of what's been said.
It's okay, Ma. We're all going to the House of Pancakes.